Thanks for checking out the podcast of the Church at Lake Travis. If you have any questions about our church, visit us online at churchlt.com.
Good morning. How are you doing? Jeremy just mentioned about when we met. I remember the day we met. We were waiting in line at the cafeteria. And there's so much I was thinking about. I was like, man, when you know somebody as long as I've known Pastor Jeremy and their family, I've known Ashley longer than I've known Jeremy. I was like, should I share stories? And I have plenty. I'm not going to go there. But I will say this. We're in this series, Faith for Everyday Life. And in the first week that I knew Jeremy, after meeting him, in that first week, we had a conversation about what he felt like God was doing in his life and where he felt like God was leading him. And in the first week that I met Pastor Jeremy, he told me, he said, I believe that God has called me to plant a church in Austin, Texas. And I look back on that day, and that's not the only time that I've seen faith at work in their family. The Selfs are a family that lives by faith. And I am always challenged by just watching him say, I feel like God's called us to do this. And then he doesn't wait. He just goes in faith. And so I'm always challenged by that. And I'm seeing you all as a church being challenged by that faith as well. And so with that, let's jump into the text today. Faith for everyday life. Now, you've been in Hebrews for a while, and now you've kind of parked in Hebrews chapter 11. And in Hebrews chapter 11, we see all these different, what we kind of like to call the heroes of faith. Now, I want to be careful about something. This title, Faith for Everyday Life. I want to be careful that we don't look at faith the way we look at our combo at Chick-fil-A. What do I mean by that? We go to Chick-fil-A, you go and you get the combo, and you know what? I think instead of waffle fries, I'll substitute faith today. But make sure I get the chicken sandwich. You see, sometimes in today's world, we have this and I believe that the people that the author of Hebrews was speaking to were probably struggling with the same thing, or he wouldn't have talked about it. We have this idea that let's just put a little faith on it. And I just want to be clear that the writer of Hebrews is not telling them, and he's not telling us, just put a little dash of faith on what you're going through. No, he's saying to us, we must live by faith. In every area, not some areas, not the areas that are going bad and then we live by fact in the areas that are going good. No, we live by faith in every area. So I think we need to be careful when we say faith for everyday life that we're not simply going, hey, let's add a little faith to our everyday life. But no, let our everyday life be lives of deep faith. And so with that, I want to kind of jump in and kind of read the passage that we're going to be looking at today. But in doing so, I want to make sure we have the context of what the writer of Hebrews is talking about in this moment. And so rather than jumping right to the text for the day, I want to start with Hebrews chapter 10, verse 39. And he's speaking to them, and he has shared all this stuff about how that they have lived by the law. And he's saying to them, the law was good, but Jesus is better. And he's saying to them, in this world that you find yourself in, life is going to be hard. And don't turn back to the law when life gets hard. Turn to Jesus. Because he is enough. Because the people in this church that he was speaking to, they kept wanting to grab hold of what was comfortable. And for them, it was their Hebrew heritage. It was the Hebrew law. And he kept saying to them, no, Jesus came that you could live the full life that we have all been waiting on. And so as life gets tough, don't shrink back. And that's where he finds himself. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved. And so as we sit here today in our everyday life, let's start there by saying, no, we declare that we are not of those who shrink back. Why? Because faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And then he says this, this is what the ancients were commended for. Now let me stop there for just a minute, because again, he's writing to this Hebrew church, and they're thinking about all that they've been taught, and they're like, man, are we letting go of everything that the patriarchs told us by grabbing hold of Jesus? Are we letting go of everything that we learned through the law of Moses by grabbing hold of Jesus? And he's saying to them, no. As a matter of fact, you are seizing what they were holding out for. As a matter of fact, you are not breaking rank by living this life of faith in Christ and all that he has done for you, but you are grabbing hold of what they were hoping for. Does that make sense? So he wants to make sure we and they know that what we're doing falls into a great line of people of faith. That when we live in this today, 2017, and the world around us tells us your faith is a crutch, that when we look back on our family and when we look back on the heroes of faith, we say, no, we are in good company. Because this is what the ancients were commended for. And then he goes on and begins to talk about all these different heroes of faith. And then we get to today. And here in verse 21 of chapter 11. And this is our text for today. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshiped as he leaned on the top of his staff. And then I want to keep it in context. I want to jump ahead real quick, because what does this tell us in chapter 12? Therefore, last week, Jeremy opened up and talked about Jacob. And you guys are going to be talking about other heroes. Why? Why is he bringing all of these to our remembrance? Why? Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Therefore, since we are in good company, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, who is better, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame. So that's the full context that when we look at these heroes of faith, that when we read and that when we study who these men are and what they have done, that it would cause us to want to rise up and seize what God has put in front of us, not shrink back and say, oh no, how is it going to work out? And so with that said, let's unpack this passage in verse 21. And as we unpack it, we're going to unpack it in three parts. So let's start with the first part in verse 21. Here's what it says. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying. Let's take a minute and do a who, what, when, where. Who are we talking about? We're talking about Jacob. Last week, you heard a whole lot about Jacob. What do we know about Jacob? As Pastor Jeremy summed up last week, we know that Jacob was a jerk. And so when we look at Jacob and we see him counted as one of these, here's what we learn. And we learned this last week. God calls jerks. God redeems jerks. And God uses jerks. We could call the band up right now, right? Because that's good news. And so we know this about Jacob. And we know that God did redeem him and God did use him. And if you weren't with us last week, you can catch that podcast and hear a whole lot more about exactly who Jacob was. Who, what, when, where. Let's talk about that next question. What? We're talking about faith, right? By faith. What are we talking about? We're talking about faith. And here's the question that crosses my mind. There are so many snapshots that the author could have grabbed about Jacob. There's a ton of stuff about Jacob in the Old Testament. He could have grabbed so many things. But yet he grabs this story that chances are the children's ministry scope and sequence does not include. Why? There's something to this. There's something that the author wants us to see in this exact snapshot of him blessing Joseph's sons. When he was at the end of his life. Why run a race if you're not going to finish, right? What's the point? And why run a race if there's not some kind of reward at the end? And so we find this man at the end of his life, and he is still clinging in the same way that he clung on to Esau's heel coming out of the womb. He is still clinging to faith. Oh, that I would be that kind of man. That not just in this moment as I stand here, but at the end of it all, I would be clinging to faith. That I would see the race as worth finishing. And I would see that there is something on the other side of the finish line. Where? He's in Egypt. We know a lot about Egypt from history. It's one of the civilizations that there's still a lot out there to learn from because it was so impressive. So as he is bestowing this blessing on his children, he is in Egypt and he is a sojourner. He does not belong there. But yet Egypt is safe, secure, and sexy. It's nice. It's pretty. It's comfortable. It's easy compared to the stony ground that he came from. And it's in this context where he could look around and say, you know what? Forget the promises. I like Egypt. He could have so easily done that, but he doesn't. That's the context that we find this passage showing up in. And so now, let's move on to the second mark. He blessed each of Joseph's sons. We're gonna spend most of our time here in Genesis chapter 48. And we're going to look at this narrative. We're going to look at this story of Jacob blessing Joseph's sons. And I'm going to begin reading verse 48. Chapter 48, verse 1. Sometime later, Joseph was told, your father is ill. So we already know he's at the end of his life. So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, along with him. When Jacob was told, your son Joseph has come to you, Israel rallied his strength and sat up in the bed. Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty. That's one of the names of God, El Shaddai. He's speaking of this God that he knows personally and intimately. God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan. And so he goes into this story that I can only imagine he has told over and over and over again to his sons and probably even to his grandsons. He is telling them a story that I have a feeling they know very well. And here at the end, he tells it again. And he reminds them of the promise. And he says, in the land of Canaan, and there he blessed me and said to me, I am going to make you fruitful and will increase your numbers. I will make you a community of peoples, and I will give this land as an everlasting possession to your descendants after you. And so he goes in to this time of remembrance and sharing with Joseph something that I believe Joseph probably already knows. As a matter of fact, when I think about my own grandfather, who was a true man of faith, near the end of his life, for like the last 10 years of his life, every single time I would see him, and I didn't see him but a few times a year, but every single time I would see him, he would remind me of this vision that he had. And he always picked the kind of the most awkward moments to tell me about this vision. This vision that he had told me about so often, I mean, it's like after Thanksgiving dinner when he would come up and you would imagine he would say, hey, wasn't that really good corn souffle? No, he doesn't say that. He comes up to me and he says, Stephen, you know that I saw Jesus. I walked the sands of Israel with him. And I'm like, whoa, can't we just talk about whether or not the Lions are going to win the football game today? And he would put this in front of me on a regular basis. And he would all so often do it as he was leaving. And I found myself sometimes having this idea about it all. Oh no, here we go again. And so here's the challenge that we see as it relates to blessing, as it relates to faith. May we never have a here we go again attitude about the things that God has done in our lives. And may we as parents, as grandparents, be people of faith who tell our kids on a regular basis what God has done in our family. It's important. May we be people who tell the story. That is a part of being people of faith. Now then, your two sons born to you in Egypt, before I came to you here, will be reckoned as mine. Ephraim and Manasseh will be mine, just as Reuben and Simeon are mine. In other words, just as my own firstborn are mine, they're going to be mine. Any children born to you after them will be yours in the territory they inherit. They will be reckoned under the names of their brothers. As I was returning from Padan, to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Canaan while we were still on the way, a little distance from Ephrath. And so I buried her there beside the road, that is Bethlehem. Let's unpack this for a moment. Here's what he's doing. He is adopting these two children of Joseph's. He's adopting them. And why is he adopting them? Notice who he mentions. He mentions Rachel, who is Joseph's mother, who was supposed to be barren, but God came and God answered and God gave her Joseph. Rachel was the one, she was the one who Jacob loved, had a special love for. So Jacob had a special love for Rachel, and he had a special love for Joseph. And so here's what he's saying to Joseph. He's saying, I have a special love for you, and in that love, I am going to adopt your children. For those in the room who have adopted, you know what that feels like in a way that I don't. You see, faith, listen to this, faith is calling that which is not as though it is. Adoption is making that which is not so. And I'm here to tell you this morning that because of the work of Christ, our adoption is not something we have to wait on by faith. In this moment, that is something we can seize, that we are adopted as children of the Most High. And we see that in Ephesians chapter 1. It's going to come up on the screen. For he chose us in him. This is beautiful. It wasn't an afterthought. It wasn't that seems like a good idea, a plan B. No, before the creation of the world, to be holy and blameless in his sight. In love, he predestined us for adoption to sonship through Jesus Christ in accordance with his pleasure and will, to the praise of the glorious grace which he has freely given us in the one he loves. And so this morning we see in this passage as he adopts Ephraim and Manasseh, we see this love thing happening, and it encourages us that God is in the business of making things that are not so. And he does that in our lives by bringing us into his family. And it's a beautiful picture. And it just so happens that we see the word Bethlehem show up there. And we know where that story goes much later. Let's continue. When Israel saw the sons of Joseph, he asked, "Who are these?" Let's just pause there for a minute. There's a few different ways you can look at this, but most commentators look at it this way. They don't look at it as the man being senile and forgetting what was happening. They look at it more as if they are now entering the ceremony of blessing. So think about what happens when you have a wedding, right? The man and the wife come down to the altar and they say, "Who gives this woman in marriage?" Right? And so often the father is standing right there. And it seems odd if it was not a ceremony to ask that question. So this shows us that there is something ceremonial happening here. "They are the sons God has given me here," Joseph said to his father. Then Israel said, "Bring them to me so I may bless them." Now Israel's eyes were failing because of old age and he could hardly see. So Joseph brought his sons close to him and his father kissed them and embraced them. Israel said to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face again." Why? If you know the story, you know that Joseph was sold into slavery. And his brothers didn't tell his father that part. They brought back his robe covered in blood to signify that he was dead. So as far as Jacob knew, his son would never be seen again. And we see hope in this little passage. We see some other things too, and we'll talk about that in a moment. "I never expected to see your face again. And now God has allowed me to see your children too." Now let's talk about this for a minute, because I want to talk as it relates to blessing, as it relates to family, as it relates to raising children, as it relates to all this aspect of faith in everyday life. Ceremony is important. But not ceremony for ceremony's sake. You see, ceremony helps us pause and realize that what is happening around us is important. My family had an example of this past week. On Monday, our dog that we'd had for a long time, we had to put our dog to sleep. And that was rough on my children. And as we came home from the vet, having to report this information to my children, I looked at my wife and I said, "I wish I could just push fast forward and get on the other side of this and keep trucking. Because I know that the next 24 hours are going to be hard." But I knew, as their father, that that wasn't good for me or them. I knew that my 12-year-old, my 9-year-old, and my 7-year-old, they needed to go through this hard time. And they needed to go through it with us. And it needed to be an important time for them. And as much as a part of me didn't want to go through all the process, I was like, no, I got to do this for them. And so we had a little funeral the next day on Tuesday, and it was hard too, and we gathered around where we had buried our dog, and I was like, you know what, this needs to be a living ceremony. I want this to be meaningful for my kids. And so we cried together. We hugged together. I brought some little meaning into it. Our dog's name was Daisy, and we went and got some daisies and we planted the daisies right there by the gravesite. And we talked, and my kids got to share their memories about Daisy. And we prayed together. And I looked at my kids, and in that moment, I said to them, listen, and I'm crying in that moment, mostly because I know my kids are sad. And I look at them, and I'm going, kids, I wish I could have spared you from this. But I know I'm not supposed to. Y'all need to feel this. You need to go through this. It's a part of life. And I don't always get it right. And I don't know that we got all of that right. But there was something right about that moment. Ceremony's important. Living ceremonies. You see here, he brings Ephraim and Manasseh to his father. And he doesn't just look at them and act stoic. No, he hugs them. He embraces them. He kisses them. He makes that moment real. It's not a sterile moment. It's a loving moment. And then he says something to Joseph. He says, Joseph, I remember the day they brought that robe to me. And I want to say this real quick. In Lamentations chapter 3, it tells us that God's mercies are new every morning. May we never allow the things that God does through his mercy to become old. Do y'all get that? May we never allow the mercies that God brings into our life when God does something in our life and in our family. May we never allow that to get old where we look back and say, yeah, but that was 4 years ago. No, when God does something through his mercy, that thing is an everlasting moment in our lives. And we can grab hold of it over and over and over again. And when we go and grab hold of that which God has done for us, all of a sudden what happens? Our faith grows. Because in that moment, we remember the new mercies of God all over again. And that's what Jacob is doing in this moment. Then Joseph removed them from Israel's knees and bowed down with his face to the ground. And Joseph took both of them, Ephraim on his right. So Joseph, this becomes kind of ceremonial. So he takes both of them, Ephraim on his right, toward Israel's left hand. So you picturing this? So by the way, these sons are probably not toddlers. They're probably in their 20s. All right. So he picks them up from embracing their grandfather. He backs them up is what I'm imagining. And then he takes Ephraim and makes sure, because Ephraim's the younger, makes sure to take Ephraim toward his father's left hand. And then he takes Manasseh and makes sure to take Manasseh toward his father's right hand. Because when the blessing is bestowed, the right hand falls upon the firstborn. That's the way it works. You have this right hand of blessing, and that's what the firstborn gets. They get the full blessing, and then you have the secondborn gets the left hand. And that's the way it works. And so here's what happens. And Joseph took both of them, Ephraim on his right toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh on his left toward Israel's right hand, and brought them close to him. But Israel reached out his right hand. Can you picture it trembling? In his old age, he reaches out, and they're all waiting for it. But Israel reached out his right hand and put it on Ephraim's head, though he was the younger. And crossing his arms, he put his left hand on Manasseh's head, even though Manasseh was the firstborn. So right here, you see a switch take place. Nobody's ready for it. What in the world? So here's the question you got to ask. Did this set heaven on high alert? Did all the angels run up and down the streets of gold and Gabriel shouts out the trumpet and say, we got to call an emergency staff meeting? Jacob's just flipped everything and we got to change the script? So did earth inform heaven, or did heaven inspire earth? We know the answer to that. God was up to something. This is the way God operates. Why in the world? What's so significant about this switch of the firstborn? There's so many things we could say here. Paul, he read just a little while ago from Colossians chapter 1. Firstborn from among, from all creation. Here's what I think God's doing here, and here's what he does over and over and over and over again throughout the Old Testament. He is always pointing to someone who is better. And so as he flips those hands and as he crosses the hands, here's what God is screaming into history. There is a better firstborn coming. And his name is Jesus. And I am going to continue to point you in his direction. And here's what's so beautiful about it. It doesn't just point us to Jesus, but it opens up the door for us to sit beside of him. Why? Because we are also the lesser. We are also the left-handed, left out, and leftovers. And God says, I got a place for you at my table because of my son, the great, the better firstborn. The one who everybody's going to look on as he is born in a stable and laid in a manger. And they're going to scratch their heads and go, this seems really odd. But I was setting you all up for it all along. That is our Savior. That is the better firstborn. And all throughout the Old Testament, we see that. We're running out of time. I'm going to skip ahead. And I'm going to paraphrase. So here's what happens. Joseph sees his father do this and he tries to switch his hands. He says, no, no, Dad. He doesn't say this, but in his actions, he's saying, no, Dad, you're a little bit senile. You've forgotten what you're doing. To which Israel, Jacob says, no, this is what we're doing. And this is how we are going to bless, because this is what God's Spirit is up to today. And so here's the question that this asks of us. How often do we look at our Heavenly Father as he blesses us and go, no, 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 Dad, you got to have it wrong. Oh, that we would be people that are like Jacob and say, God, I'm open to whatever you're doing. You see, let's talk about a true blessing real quick. True blessings aren't based on our will and desires. True blessings don't quite make sense to our dimmed eye vision. True blessings are never for the recipient only. True blessings always point to Jesus. It goes on in this passage, and it tells us one other thing that happens. And the band can come up at this time. It tells us that Jacob worshiped while leaning on his staff. Jacob worshiped while leaning on his staff. Now, here's what's interesting about that. I thought that the Hebrew writer found that somewhere else, and it wasn't in the Bible. The fact of the matter is that passage comes out of at the end of Genesis chapter 47 when Jacob is talking to Joseph and he says to Joseph this. He says, Joseph, promise me, and this is faith, promise me that my bones will not be buried in Egypt because this is not our promised land. And Joseph promises, and it's in that moment that it says he worships while leaning on a staff. And that tells us so much about Joseph. First of all, it reminds us of his limp. I just imagine this man here at the very end, and he's thinking about that day that he was blessed and how that it put a limp to where he had to walk with a cane the rest of his life. And so over time, Jacob starts realizing, you know what? This cane isn't half bad. My dad just recently had to use a cane, and he did not want to use a cane because this is a man, this is a Vietnam War vet, this is a man's man, and he's like, man, I'm not going to use a cane. But after using it, my mom was just telling me the other day that he used the cane, and he walked down the hall of the hospital, and the doctor said, how is it? And he goes, that's pretty good. You see, first, prideful old Jacob's like, no, I can get by. But then he becomes this man who says, no, I'm going to start leaning. I'm going to start leaning by faith on the work of God in my life and not my own efforts. To over time, something begins to happen in Jacob. He begins to fulfill what is said in Psalm 40 when it says, blessed is the man who makes God his trust. In other words, Jacob said, nope, it's not enough just to lean. I'm going to let faith be my legs. So when people looked at me and they say, is faith a crutch? Jacob would say to them, no. Faith is not my crutch. Faith is my legs. And it's everything I got. And so he says to Joseph, don't bury my bones here. And Joseph says, I'm not going to. And Jacob worships. Here's the deal. On Monday, when I had to go back to the vet, to be in the room, say goodbye to our family dog, it was one of these moments that just reminded me, yes, it's a dog, but what I said to the vet as in her last moments, what I said to the vet as soon as that ended, and it was just kind of quiet in the room, I just looked at the veterinarian and I said, you know, final? Because that was final for her. And I looked at the vet and I said, final's never easy. Final is always hard. It always causes this feeling inside of you of just kind of helplessness and hopelessness. When Jacob said, don't bury my bones here. When Jacob said, these two are mine. When Jacob said, God's calling us back to Canaan. I'm not going to see it. Here's what he was saying. Egypt is not our final destination. This is not where we are going to end up. Faith looks at the hard times of our life. Faith looks at where we are right now and says, I don't know how it's going to work out. I don't know when it's going to work out. But as Job said, my Redeemer lives. And he'll stand on the earth in the last day. Faith says that there is always hope. Because the one who redeemed us, he died. And it wasn't final. Faith says that I don't have to have all the answers in the here and now. Because I know the one who holds tomorrow. Faith says, this that I find myself in today, no matter whether it's good or whether it's bad, this is not final. Because I know the Alpha and the Omega. That's what Joseph was saying as he crossed those arms. Let's stand together. As we close, let's think about the Egypts of our life, the things that would be comfortable, that God would say to us, I want you to look beyond the Egypt. Let's think about the things in our life that we say, man, that's done, that's over with, that's dead. And let's remember the one who rose from the dead. And let's allow him to fill us with faith. Father, be with us today. Let us not look to you and question the crossing of your hands. Let us not look to you and think there is no hope, but let us know that the one who is better, the firstborn from among the dead, is with us, and there is always hope. And let us hold to his promises. Let us hold to his truth. Let us hold to his future over our lives. We thank you for this. In Christ's name. As the band plays, we're going to have communion. There is open communion here, which means if you have that relationship with Jesus, you are welcome to take communion. The communion trays are here in the front and in the back. There are also prayer partners in the back as well for those who would like to pray with someone. And as we take communion this morning, as you look at the bread and you think about his sacrifice, as you look at the cup and you think about his blood, remember that he tells us, do this as often as you will. And what are you going to remember? You're going to remember that this is not final. And that there's going to come a day, church, where we're going to take that cup and that bread as we sit at his table. Let's worship together.
Thanks again for listening to our podcast. Our mission is to lead people into a life-giving relationship with Jesus Christ, and our prayer is that you are closer to Jesus as a result of listening today.